Greetings, Curiosity Builders. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, visionaries, and changemakers who are on a mission of chasing big ideas, telling epic stories, and leaving living legacies. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative and curious life for some time, I hope you'll learn something new in this podcast and find yourself inspired to break through the barriers that hold you back and keep you stuck from getting your work to work. What do you do when an unspeakable tragedy leaves you feeling shocked, angry, helpless, and useless? For today's guest on Getting Work to Work, September 11th, 2001 was a day that shaped, defined, and tested who she was. Magda Khalifa is a first-generation American, U.S. Army combat veteran, author, and entrepreneur. In our conversation, she describes the details and emotions that led her to enlist in the Army, the health issues she would experience after serving two tours of duty in Iraq, and how volunteering helped her to stop suffering in silence and become healthy. Magda also touches on the healing nature of writing her book, American Dream: Discipline, Resilience, Endurance, Adaptability, and Mentorship to Succeed and Win in Life, discovering the Freedom Triangle, and starting the first veteran-owned fragrance brand, Triangle Fragrance. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/415. Magda, welcome to Getting Work to Work. It is an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you very much, Chris. Great to be here.
Well, I like to ask this first question of everyone that I talk to because I've got a thing about curiosity. And I'm curious, what are you endlessly curious about?
Yeah. So I've always been a curious person. I love to learn and grow and learn new skills and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I love learning the root cause of how things work or why things are the way they are. You know, I like to apply critical thought and just learn exactly what's really going on. Yeah. To me, that's fascinating.
When did you really get on this journey of learning? Was this something that when you were a kid, you were always interested in learning things, or was it something that you've discovered as you've gone on this life journey that you've been on?
I think it was my environment growing up as a kid. Mm-hmm. My father had a lot of different, you know, this was in the 70s, so before the internet. so you had many magazine subscriptions and, you know, magazines with different topics. And even though I didn't necessarily understand all of them, I would see them. I would see him reading them. So I would peruse them and he would often, you know, suggest certain articles or whatnot, even if they were over my head. That environment made me curious about things that I otherwise would not have been exposed to. Mm-hmm. And he was very curious in nature. We mirror each other in that manner. So of course, with travel and you know, sightseeing and whatnot, you know, he was as interested in history and learning about things as I realized I've become. And I believe that started with my home environment growing up as a child. Yeah.
It's amazing just how strong the home environment can be to foster that curiosity, because as you were describing the different magazine subscriptions, I was flashing back to growing up with the gold letters on the brown encyclopedia books, like the World Book Encyclopedia. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I remember those. We had them. I remember they were dusty at times, but it was, you know, they took up a lot of real estate on the bookshelf. But wow, just when you mentioned that, I remember that as well. And Dad would reference things in those encyclopedias. And of course, we used them for school. We didn't have Google back then. So for our papers, we had to turn towards the encyclopedias. What a great memory.
It's amazing what our brains can remember as we get older. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting what we store and put away, but we can access very quickly. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you mentioned that, I absolutely recalled immediately that we had the encyclopedias on the bookshelf and I remember exactly where they were. Mm-hmm. And I can remember the smell of the pages. It was a very large volume and they had a unique smell. They were, I guess, printed on, you know, high quality encyclopedia paper. You know?
Where would you say your journey to becoming the person you are today started?
It started, again, at home as a child with the environment that I grew up in. But the catalyst that really kind of changed and defined or tested me was September 11th, 2001. Mm-hmm. What I grew up with prior to that, you know, served me in life later and throughout. And I think that's important that I had that foundation because it helped me through my journey ultimately. Yeah. And I think that was important to have. So I would say the home environment. I was the eldest and growing up in the North Jersey, you know, the metropolitan New York City area, very densely populated state, very competitive, very cultural, very, you know, you had everything here, everything. Mm-hmm. So I was exposed to a lot. So I had an appreciation for a lot, you know, skills and experiences and people and whatnot. And I think that's pretty much always been a part of me. Mm-hmm. Granted, there was a period of time where everything was muted, you know, because of experiences and what happened later on in life, but it's come back. So, but that stems from my upbringing.
Mm. What did you want to be when you were going to grow up, quote unquote, you know, before you had this, I guess, awakening?
Well, I think as a really little kid, I wanted to be an actress because my father used to watch, you know, Marilyn Monroe and Westerns and whatnot. And, you know, she was like the epitome of what a little girl would grow up to want to be. We didn't have a lot of female role models, you know, back then. So, but because I saw her on TV a lot, I guess in my mind, I want to be an actress like Marilyn Monroe. But that's when I was a little child, you know. Later on, you know, high school, I was into, you know, music and whatnot. I was not a talented performer, but I loved music, of course. You know, I dabbled around with guitar and in a garage band and whatnot. So I wanted to be, you know, a rock star. Yeah. But that was kind of like short-lived, I guess, when I realized I really didn't have the talent, but it was a lot of fun. And then after that, you know, I was groomed essentially to go into business or into, into the corporate world.
Okay.
And I didn't necessarily want that, but it kind of, you know, made sense because that's kind of how I was groomed to go in that path. Yeah. So I guess it evolved over time.
And being that you grew up in the metropolitan area, New York City, I only know what I felt across the country, but it's entirely different when you're there. And I'm curious what awoke in you that morning, September 11th, 2001, that not only motivated you to join the Army, but completely sounds like change your life.
Yeah, it definitely was a time that changed a lot of people's lives, even if they did not, you know, if they were not personally affected or have somebody in their family or coworkers that were affected, though I don't know too many people that, you know, live in the area that didn't know someone, you know. So I was married at the time and my husband was not there that day, but he did work in the 101st floor of Tower One. So he lost almost 200 coworkers.
Wow.
And so that was very, you know, it was very near and dear to us, but beyond that, seeing the visuals, I mean, that left an impression. You could see things, smell things, the smell of sulfur, you know, that rotten egg smell, right across the river. It was very pungent, you know, the sights, the sounds. I mean, that left an impression. I mean, it was so massive. I will say that compared to what I saw in Iraq and I, you know, saw battle what I saw on September 11th, 2001 here in New York City, having grown up here and seeing the destruction was in a sense far greater of, I don't know. It just, it literally was so intense. So it's interesting because I served with a lot of people who, like most Americans, you know, we all woke up and saw it on TV and they were in different parts of the country, not necessarily by the Pentagon or not necessarily in Pennsylvania or not necessarily here in the New York City area. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to describe because they would ask me like what it was like. And I, you know, would share the details of what I recall, but I feel it does not capture it, you know, until you experience something like that, you know? and having lived in the area my entire life, I mean, just from the standpoint of the fact that Twin Towers were massive, I mean, they were gargantuan, and they stood up in the sky, and when they were gone, it was kind of strange because you kind of lost your bearing, because prior to that, you always knew where you were because based on where they were. Wow. You knew if you're, you know, uptown or east side or west side or whatnot, because you knew where they were. They were physically symbolic and visible. Mm-hmm. So that was weird in itself. You know, that was a big change. You know, obviously not the most important thing, of course, but mm-hmm. I did think that was like a tangible thing. And I try to explain to people, like, when, you know, something that you look at, like if you live in a certain area for a long period of time and then it's gone, you know, it things will feel differently. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I mean, certain, just walking around the area, I remember seeing, like, I'll never forget the 8x11 sheets of paper with pictures of people that were missing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ask, you know, the family members would post these photos. Have you seen, mm-hmm. you know, Jennifer Smith, and a photo of Jennifer. And yeah, that was, wow. That was intense. I mean, there was so much detail that day, so much, mm-hmm. but that's something, like, you know, sitting here talking to you, thinking about it, it is hard because there were a lot of senses that were activated.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of emotion, of course, started, you know, with shock. And then that turned towards anger mm-hmm. as we learned what really was going on here. And the feeling of helplessness was what was the true catalyst of why I joined the Army to go serve, because, like, we couldn't donate blood. You know, my husband and I try to donate blood, you know, go to a blood bank and donate blood. They had enough blood. There weren't enough survivors. I remember there were calls for construction equipment, people with medical skills. I mean, I was 29 years old at the time, I think. No medical skills, like no construction equipment. Like, I just felt useless sitting on the sidelines watching. Mm-hmm. And that's an unsettling feeling when you're country's attacked, your fellow Americans are attacked, and like you cannot really do anything. I was working in the IT industry, although we call it something else back then, management information systems. You know, I wanted to volunteer my skills to help the effort, but they weren't needed. You know, I was calling around and that wasn't what was needed. In other words, you know, it was a rescue effort, then a recovery effort. So I realized, like, probably for the first time in my life, like how useless I was as a human being, you know, as an able-bodied human being. So,
wow,
you know, part anger and part needing to do something and take action, I went to the recruiter's office and joined, and it just made sense.
Yeah. Wow. I think what stood out among all of that, I mean, is just that feeling of, you know, how can I be of service? How can I be of help? And that's just what a powerful feeling that propelled you forward.
Yeah. I mean, of course, I didn't see it coming, you know, but when it happens and it makes sense, you know, I think people take action and do the right thing, whatever it may be, when it's a compelling case. And that was, you know, obviously the most compelling case ever.
Yeah. So you basically go on this journey at this point from being groomed for corporate America to heading to a recruiter's office and joining the Army.
Yeah, I had been working in corporate for about, let me see, that was 2001, so about 6 years.
Wow.
So I graduated college in 95. Mm-hmm. So from a full-time basis, I had 6 years of, you know, corporate experience. Mm-hmm. I knew I was leaving my life behind. I knew that this commitment was not, hey, I'll just go and come back and everything's going to be the same.
Yeah.
I didn't know what exactly would change, but I knew enough to know that the life I had previously was not ever going to be exactly the same.
Wow.
I was not prepared for what I would be dealing with, but I've always had the mindset, jump, take the risk, figure it out, you know, figure it out later. So no regrets, you know, because I think that's worse to like live with regrets. And yeah, it just made sense at the right time.
Were there, I mean, you said you basically, your life was different from this point on, but what were some of the surprises that you learned about who you would become and what you would do through that time of serving in Iraq?
So I didn't have expectations in terms of how I would change. I mean, I expected this would be, this was obviously a very new experience, but I learned a lot about myself and I learned, you know, like how I handle situations. And I learned that I had experiences that perhaps, you know, taught me that just because someone puts on a uniform and serves doesn't mean that they're full of integrity. Wow. And that was a little bit challenging. And I do speak about it, some of that in my book. So I guess that was a big surprise, was to get to a point where, you know, God bless the interpreters that we were working with, the local Iraqis. There were some phenomenal people who, like, you know, put their lives at risk to work with coalition forces. But to get to the point where I knew they had my back better than some of my leadership there on the ground, that was definitely a surprise, definitely something I would not have imagined experiencing. And it was very hard. It was very hard, you know, and that's one of the things I struggled with when I came back, because that was a big trust issue and integrity issue and not something that you saw coming.
Wow. I mean, integrity is one of those, it sounds like very fundamental to who you are and how you view others.
Absolutely. And as a soldier, of course, you know, serving, that's, you know, one of our Army values. That's something that's drilled into you from basic training. So it's something that's expected and it's realistic to have those expectations, because that's how a team operates in a cohesive manner. You have to have that trust amongst the team. And we worked in small teams, 3- and 4-man teams. So when that's breached, that's a problem. That's a huge problem. And, you know, in the years since, of course, I mean, there have been many public cases of situations as such, not the exact same scenario, but where trust was betrayed, oftentimes by leadership, you know. And there are people, you know, service members who have been through far, far worse than what I experienced. But, you know, I believe this is something that happens everywhere in every entity, organization, without a doubt. And that's something you learn, I guess, as you go through life. Because we start off, you know, of course, when we're young, you know, we're idealistic and we think perhaps, you know, we see the best in everything. And and that's fine. But then as you experience life and you learn about realities of things, it makes you a little bit more frosty.
Frosty is a great word.
Yes. Yes.
How would you describe the transformation process that you went through from combat soldier to civilian after the two tours in Iraq?
Initially, it was very scary in the sense, like, I went from having, you know, my band of brothers around me to not having that. And it was, you know, you're very much alone, couldn't connect with anyone. You know, on a personal level, I was at the same time going through a divorce, was not close with my family. I was probably a hard pill to understand, you know, and, but, you know, challenges on both sides, that's fine. It is what it is. You know, if you list all the different, I think there's a list of all the things that cause stress in your life, right? I think I had like, you know, the top 20 going on all at once. You know?
Oh my gosh.
So, and there was no guidebook because, I mean, this was, I came back the first time I served in 2004, came back at the end of 2004, and then went back in 06, came back in 07. So like summer 07, you know, we had been at war for 6 years, but things were still new. You know, the collateral damage, if you will, of what troops were experiencing was still unfolding. So we didn't have the collective knowledge or resources available at that time. you know. So it was definitely challenging because you were dealing with, you know, again, it wasn't so much like what you saw or did, but I didn't know, unbeknownst to me at the time, it had a lot to do with the up-tempo, the exposures to, you know, what we experienced in my case, in the desert. Mm-hmm. Burn pits, a lot of toxicity, all that affects your DNA. Mm-hmm. And how you feel. So even though I came back and I was physically, you know, I had my arms, legs, eyesight, I wasn't burnt, anything, I was not the same person. Yeah. I did not feel great. I felt like I hit like a wall, like I slammed into that wall. I remember being so tired, mm-hmm. having headaches, depression, mm-hmm. anxiety, just horrible, you know, feeling horrible. It was bad. And it lasted for a long time and I didn't know what was going on, but I knew enough not to turn to quick fixes, be it something chemical and illegal or even alcohol or prescription, like, you know, psychotropic drugs from the VA, you know? So I knew enough not to do that. So instead I suffered in silence for a long time, trying to push through one day at a time. But that's the beauty of it. Having gone through that and in recent years, having fully emerged, so much better and changed and having learned certain things along the way. You know, I realized how invaluable that is. Yeah. And that's the main reason I shared my story is because I figured out a few things that maybe other people who, you know, they don't have to be combat veterans, you know, returning, but you know, people going through struggle may want to know about these things because if I knew about them, you know, in 2007, maybe my, you know, the number of years I would have been not living optimally would have been reduced, but it is what it is. The best thing I could do right now is share that with others.
Yeah. I'm curious, as you were suffering in silence, I mean, what a powerful phrase and a powerful feeling. Was there a person that helped you work through these issues and to help bring your silence forward?
Well, initially, no, because I kept everything to myself. I was functional on the outside. Mm-hmm. You know, worked my job, was, you know, exercised, you know, paid my taxes. I was functional, had a home, but I was very reclusive and you hid all that, you know, that's what I did. And that's what a lot of veterans do for a lot of reasons. You know, you don't show that weakness, that vulnerability, you don't ask for help. So it wasn't until I started volunteering on the side with veteran nonprofits that helped a lot of veterans who were perhaps, you know, worse off in, say, a physical way because they were missing limbs, or also including post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injuries and a slew of other health issues. So I started helping those organizations using, you know, my business skills on the board of directors to help shape the program, do fundraising and take care, you know, of these veterans. And in the process of doing that, I started to learn from the health standpoint, what was going on in the veteran community, those of us that had deployed, and learning about the science. So getting back to the first question you asked me about what I was curious about, I was finally learning the root cause of why so many of us were feeling the way we were feeling. Less than optimal. Yeah. So I started learning and then, you know, I got tests and whatnot. And I realized there was stuff going on in me, you know, that explained why I was feeling horribly. So all of a sudden it gave me hope because I thought, well, if I could fix that, then I can feel better. Like there are some reasons, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, you know, I finally figured it out. So who helped me there? Great friend of mine, Jeff Dardia, who's active duty Army Special Forces. He led the program for one of the nonprofits I was serving for, Task Force Dagger Foundation. And he led the program, the Self-Health Initiatives program, that essentially, you know, got to the root cause and it was backed by science. And what the organization did is it sought non-pharmacological, non-surgical solutions or therapies, if you will, to help the veterans heal for the long term. sustained improvements. So I learned from him. He is amazing, an amazing person. You know, he was doing this while he was deploying and while he was still on active duty, and he's still on active duty, and it's just unbelievable. The work he has done for the community, the veteran community overall, unbelievable. So he was absolutely like a big catalyst for me, because once I have a bit of knowledge, I can run. You know, I just needed some direction to understand, you know, what the heck was going on. And I trusted him and I learned from him, and it made sense. So like we grew collectively as an organization, and I was very grateful for that, because that's where I started to heal by fixing the health portion. That set the tone for me to be open to receive messages that I needed to hear. So I got into personal, professional development, started listening to, you know, a lot of mentors, like people like John Maxwell, you know, leadership mentors and whatnot. And, you know, seeing a lot of these folks speak, and it was certain things that they said that connected with me and that made me realize I needed to grow. I needed to do things differently. I needed to change. And ultimately that I was playing too small, and it helped me grow. So from a health standpoint, I certainly credit Jeff Dardia. And from a business standpoint, I would credit like John Maxwell in particular, and most recently, Grant Cardone with the 10X movement, because I even wrote about in the book, like certain things that he has spoken about that helped me realize my place in life and what I was doing wrong. So that was such a blessing, because again, with that little piece of knowledge, okay, I can make that course correction and roll, you know, apply that intensity that I've always had in the right path and produce and get results. And on a personal level, find fulfillment and purpose.
Listening to your story and all that you've been through and all that you've done, it's hard to believe that someone like you could dream too small. And I think that's such a powerful thing for everyone listening right now, is to consider just how much bigger you can dream with the right influences.
Absolutely. And the thing is, you have to get to the right space to be able to allow those messages to be received. Yeah. You know, what you do with them is a different story. And I know, like, if I heard these messages, if you will, like when I first got back there, I wouldn't have done anything with them, because I was not well, you know. So fixing your health first and foremost is paramount. So it was a journey. It was a process. But through that, you know, I was able to come up with a framework that can help others, so that if they are open to it, they can start to go down their path and their journeys to, first of all, improving their situation and ultimately becoming the best versions of themselves.
The framework that you're talking about, I'm assuming that is the Freedom Triangle?
Yes. Yes. The Freedom Triangle.
And I'm totally going to guess here, and that one of the parts of the triangle is health.
Yes. Health freedom.
Health freedom. Nice.
So it's time freedom, health freedom, and mind freedom. Oof. And the concept is such that you want to achieve those things earlier in life rather than at the end of your life or never at all. Oof. It's deep. It's simple, but it's deep. And, you know, because I mean, these were years of my life. I mean, I don't want to say I wasted, you know, my 30s, but I mean, got a master's degree, saved a lot of money, you know, whatever, you know, I was doing things, but there was a lot of struggle and pain along that way, you know, those years. So yeah, that's, I guess, the summation of, I took years of struggle and translated it into something that made sense that I think can help others.
Yeah.
And also too, from a philosophical standpoint, I talk a little bit about it. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I think this is like the next level, if you will, because you can reach, in my opinion, you can reach the top tier, but still be missing something, you know, this top tier of Maslow's. And I think because, you know, as humans, we're evolving and, we want more and we can do more. We have a lot of capacity. And especially now, you know, we're so globally interconnected and with technology. And so ideas are exchanged and spread at a higher velocity than perhaps they once were. And therefore, I believe our, you know, philosophical views, if you will, of, you know, purpose in life may have evolved as well. And I believe the Freedom Triangle helps shed some light on that.
Are each of these three areas of the Freedom Triangle, are they something that people work on in equal measure, or are there, is it different for every person in some weight or measure?
It's different for everybody. You know, some folks may be dialed in one area or two areas. I believe the area that most people have the hardest time with is the mind freedom for a lot of reasons. And I believe that's the area that fewest people find in their life. And again, some people do at the end of their life. So rather than waiting till, you know, end of life, it's knowledge is power and a state of being. You know, it's great to be in that state earlier than later or never at all. And I do believe a lot of people expire without having attained that mind freedom. And it is what it is, but if you know it exists and you aspire to attain that, you absolutely can. As far as everybody's timeline, it's going to vary, you know, so it's a very individual path for everybody.
I think health freedom and time freedom, those on the surface, those make sense. I think that, you know, we can kind of surmise what you're going to talk about in those areas a little bit more. But when it comes to mind freedom, can you unpack that just a little bit to kind of let people know, you know, kind of what you mean by mind freedom? Because I think, for lack of a better phrase, my mind goes in all sorts of different directions when it comes to, you know, how our mind controls us.
And key word, you just said it, control. When we realize we have control of our mind, it's very powerful, but we don't realize we have that control, or we have entities that we allow to control our mind. So a big part of it is reconciling your past, because if you truly reconcile your past, you can absolutely surge your future. You can achieve a state of what I would call a limitless, where... Well, at that point, you're not tethered by anything to pass. So it doesn't matter, you know, what happened, what didn't happen. It does not matter. Wow. And I think some people play lip service to that concept in their mind. But then, you know, it's interesting. In the past few years, I've been around, you know, some very, very, very successful on many fronts type of people. And you could still see there are, just to illustrate it, grudges that they hold on to, that they harbor. So they truly haven't reached that point just yet. But fortunately, many of them want to, you know, and that's why I show this framework. I'm working on a digital course so that people can take it at their own pace. Love to have that out before the end of the year. Right now, if folks go to thefreedomtriangle.com, there's a downloadable PDF they can print, and it's called Three Secrets. Because there's more than three. So three secrets to finding your freedom triangle. And it poses three questions and has space where people can print their answers and reflect on them. Nice. And, you know, the concept is be real, you know, be real with yourself. Don't try to solve everything. And you know, you can't, you need time to be able to process and digest and really understand these things. And I think it's more powerful when you're able to, well, two things. Draw these conclusions on your own, and to do so perhaps in your dreams, because I've experienced both scenarios, and it's so powerful because there's nothing more innate, there's nothing more powerful than literally, you know, coming up with the answers to your problems.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow. There's so much, there's just, I'm jumping up and down inside as you're sharing this, because I imagine you've helped people with this framework, not only yourself, but other people that were struggling, and you've been able to help them get unlocked from whatever was holding them back?
I have in the manner of presenting information and letting them draw their own conclusions. I never want to be prescriptive about things. I can make suggestions, but I know what worked for me doesn't necessarily mean it will work for others at a detailed level. You know, categorically, yes, I can, you know, speak to that and guide folks. But A, they have to want that, and B, they have to embrace it, because a lot of times, you know, just like New Year's resolutions, yes, I'm going to lose 10 pounds in January. You know, you have to embrace it. Just saying it, and perhaps even just writing it down, is not enough. You have to go to the gym and do, or, you know, go work out. You have to sweat, make the effort. So, you know, it's new. It's a new concept. I just introduced it in October of 2019 when the book came out. But I have received emails from some folks, and it's promising. And that's why I decided I really need to dig a little further and present this in the form of, you know, a course that people globally can access, essentially. So that's second on the to-do list here.
That's awesome. Well, the book that you mentioned is your memoir, if I understand it correctly. It's called American Dream: Discipline, Resilience, Endurance, Adaptability, and Mentorship to Succeed and Win in Life. Can you tell me a little bit about the book?
So I wrote it as a memoir to tell my story, but I didn't want it to be just pure memoir. And yes, there's history in there with the Iraq stuff, of course, but I wanted to provide value in the process. And so I wrote it with bringing up different lessons learned from the stories and, you know, ask questions of folks that they can consider in their life. So they do not have needed to have gone to war, joined the military to relate, because it could be based upon any struggle that they have. And everybody struggles with something. I mean, no one has it all figured out. You know, I just wanted to provide a perspective. And I know it's a unique perspective. So I thought, if I did not do this, the consequence would be that there is somebody out there that can benefit from this knowledge, and who am I to be so selfish? So I wrote it, you know, again, as a memoir, and also a self-help, you know, with self-help embedded throughout.
And I imagine that going through the writing process was a healing process as well, in some ways.
It didn't start out to be. I was very like task focused. Okay, I need to get the story out there, you know, boom, and wrote the bulk of it in about 3 weeks. But then I spent the next few months, I did self-publishing. So I was, you know, learning the process and whatnot. But also too, I was reducing it because it was huge. It was huge. It was like three times the size that it is right now. And I knew that wouldn't be digestible. So as I edited it, I was immersed in my past. And the process of being immersed in your past and thinking about things that you've shelved or forgotten forced me to think about things when I went to sleep. And because of the health freedom, I sleep very restfully and have good dreams, and I'm able to process. And I literally documented some of the epiphanies I had during this whole writing process. And so it was very real time at one point at the end of the book, which kind of blew my mind away. But it was cathartic in that sense, you know. And I think anybody that goes through that journey of, you know, writing and recalling, whether they publish or not, is going to experience that too on some levels, sure. So it was fascinating in a sense, you know. So here I am, the subject matter, if you will, but looking at it from an outsider, if you will, thinking, wow. Things happen for a reason. There's no accident in that you're having these specific epiphanies. And that's, I put it this way, when I started writing the book in March of last year, of 2019, the Freedom Triangle didn't exist. That was essentially the product of the epiphanies.
Wow. I love the glimpse inside the journey of writing, because I think for a lot of people, writing still has an air of mystery to it. And I just love any chance I get to glimpse inside of what not only happens, but what the results are for the writer.
It's powerful. It's very powerful. And, you know, I never, ever, ever thought I would ever write a book, let alone ever share my story, let alone stories and details that I never shared with anyone else, you know, but at the right time, you know, it made sense to do so.
Yeah. So as you move forward and you dream dreams that are bigger than you ever imagined, what do those dreams look like? What does the future look like for you?
Well, I've committed to, you know, finding my tribe, the people I can serve the best. You know, that's the strategic level. It's about finding that significance. And I know I'm on that path. It's already started in many ways based upon the feedback I've been getting from people who've read the book and have been following my journey and have seen the transformation. That being said, I also know I'm open and adaptable to circumstances, and nobody knows what the future holds for real, for certain, you know, but I also know myself well enough to know how I would react to different things. And I know that if there's a calling, if you will, that was crystal clear to me, I would go in that direction. But, you know, right now, from what I control and know as of right now, there's two goals. Like, I started a fragrance line, Triangle Fragrance, just in May. So right in the midst of COVID, I mean, the planning started before then, but launched it last month. So from that standpoint, from a business standpoint, at this point, I can safely say that I want to turn the first veteran-owned luxury fragrance line for men and women into the next great American brand. And I feel very strongly about that, more so than I did when I first started the project, given the circumstances we're in right now in this world. I absolutely believe that's the best way for me to combat this feeling of sitting here watching New York City muted, very reminiscent of what happened after September 11th, different circumstances, you know, and all these businesses that are shutting down. And it's a shame, you know, it's a big blow to our economy and business. So I'm determined to build this next great American brand, you know, made here in the USA. So from a business standpoint, that's the goal. But that's why I said the number two goal is to get this course completed so I can get it out there to serve others with the Freedom Triangle, because I think that'll help a lot of people who need it.
What I love about that too is, even though New York City's muted, even though there's businesses closing and the economy's taking a hit, you said it yourself, you know, you want to build the next American brand. And I think a lot of people hopefully are in that same place of dreaming these dreams that are bigger than they could possibly imagine, and allowing themselves to, I guess, imagine what if, but then acting toward that.
Taking action.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny when you look back in the scheme of things, I left the New York City area after returning from my second tour in Iraq, and I moved south. I was in Virginia for over 10 years, and I just moved back here 18 months ago. Wow. Just in time for this. You know, I moved back here for the people, for everything that this city stands for. And then this happens. So I'm a little upset about that. I mean, I'm making a joke because, you know, I mean, I am and I'm not, you know, I am upset about it, because as beautiful as, you know, the skies have been super blue, like bluer than they've ever been because of the lack of pollution, and as serene the beauty of, you know, the river has been, you know, there was like never a time where you wouldn't hear boats and ferries and planes and helicopters flying by. And it's just, you know, there was beauty in that. That's not what makes this city what it is. It's the people, the businesses, the opportunities, everything. And all that's been muted. So it will come back. And I believe it'll come back with a vengeance. And yes, there will be casualties. Of course, these, you know, businesses that, you know, have made that decision not to go on. So it's just interesting, the timing, you know, of being here, living it, experiencing it, watching it. And again, I hate that feeling of not being able to do something. Thankfully, I had just started this business with the fragrance company, and I thought, well, wow, the timing, you know, I mean, everything happens for a reason. Everything happens for a reason. And it is called Triangle Fragrance. It does make certain reference to the Freedom Triangle on there. There's a little self-help card. I call it the Triangle Collector's Card. Each box has its own, with its own phrases that ties to the story. So everything is very integrated. And, you know, I realized not everybody reads, or if I recorded the book on audio, not everybody listens to audio. So I thought fragrance is a different direction that would allow other people to enter this ecosystem. And if the timing is right for them, they may learn about Freedom Triangle or learn about the story, read it, and then learn about the Freedom Triangle. So, but I'm creating pathways in this method.
Wow. That's fantastic. I love the connection to a sense that isn't as used, but is so powerful. And I just, I wish you all the success in that arena, because I just like the way that you're making pathways. I mean, that's such a powerful example of how people can be creative to provide value and reach more people.
I have to say, I would not have gotten here if I had not attained that state of mind freedom. And I'm demonstrating in my own example of how, you know, I'm putting it to use. Everybody's going to have their own way of putting it to use. And it's powerful. It feels great. It's oh gosh, it's very powerful. I mean, there's no other way to describe, but it's very tangible too. You know, it's something that, you know, when you have so much clarity, like your future is crystal clear in the sense that you know the path you're going to go. Now, you know, obviously recognizing that things happen in life and you respond to it and, you know, pivot. It's nice to have that. And I didn't have that before for a lot of reasons. And I think a lot of people don't have that. So we kind of meander or wander. And maybe we're functional, but we're not fulfilled. We're not satisfied. Maybe we're successful, you know, but not satisfied. And I think a lot of people are in that space. So that's one problem I'm trying to help solve for folks.
Well, Magda, this has been such an amazing conversation. I've enjoyed hearing your story. And the last question that I have for you is, what book, podcast, or resource is blowing your mind right now?
I haven't had a lot of time to check all of them out, but I've enjoyed Jocko Wilkinson's and Navy SEALs podcast, mainly because like I love history and, you know, some of the guests he brings on, you know, they're really able to get deep into things that I find of interest. So while I'm working out, I'll listen to that. But I will say, as far as really truly being mind blown, Grant Cardone. And he has a series of, you know, outreaches that he does on social media and his YouTube channel and the different shows and whatnot. And seeing how it's compelled me, you know, in less than a year to do all of these things, you know, just because the little things that he said, he didn't say go write a book. He certainly didn't, you know, but I, you know, got different messages from him and was able to interpret that into what I needed to do. Nice. So I pay him. He's not paying me to say this. I pay him for mentorship. I do. And others do, because I find the value right there. And, you know, they could have 50 different people saying the same things in their own way, but someone is going to say it in a way that resonates with you. And his style and approach, you know, very bottom line up front, no fluff, is what resonates with me. And so I'm grateful for that.
Well, thank you so much for being on Getting Work to Work, Magda. It's, again, a pleasure to hear your story, and I'm honored that you would spend a little bit of your day with me.
The honor is all mine. I really appreciate this, Chris. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Magda, for your service and sharing your story with Getting Work to Work. If there's one call to action that I'm personally taking from this conversation, it's the importance of finding the people you can best serve with your unique story, skills, dreams, time, and energy. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.